Hi, my name is Sam Williams, and welcome to episode number 156 of my sexy music podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. So first of all, I'd like to welcome all you to episode number 156 of my sexy music podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. I'm Sam Williams, and for those of you who are just now discovering this podcast, either on the Apple Podcast app, or in Stitcher, or in iHeartRadio, or on Google Play Music, or on Spotify, and you're wondering, so what the heck is this? I'm going to give you a description of what the show is all about. Okay, so I'm Sam Williams, and I'm a 25-year-old songwriter slash producer, but I'm also a sexy music fan slash expert slash turn. Each week of this podcast, I take one song by one artist from the 60s and split the show in two parts. First part of the show, talk about my opinion of the song, why I think it's so good, or why I think it sucks, and then do my own personal analysis on the range of the song, which will include the chords and my lyrics. And second part of the show, I dig deep into the history behind that track. And that part of the show, talk about who wrote the song, who produced it, what studio the song was recorded at, the history behind the studio the song was recorded at, and the musicians that played on it, and the history behind the song, who wrote the song, and producer that produced it, the artist that sang it, or the band that performed it, and the history behind the label the song released on, and the peak position song made originally in the Billboard Hot 100 charts when it first came out, in the year and month the song was released. All that is in the second part of the show. Now, before we move on this week's episode of the podcast, I want to talk about a couple things that I wanted to share with you guys before I move on with the show. I decided to, I changed the day I released my podcast episodes by a lot, but I think that I decided to just stick to go back to doing them on the weekends because, you know, it's safe to say that everything is back to normal now and we're no longer going to be in lockdown pretty much forever at this point. So you guys are probably really, really busy back to doing normal stuff. You know, nothing too crazy. I mean, with the vaccine mandates and everything, but that's a whole other story. I mean, the point is that nothing is, things are basically back to normal right now, even though, you know, the pandemic hasn't ended yet. Things are pretty much back to normal. So I'm not going to try to put out episodes in the middle of the week because I'm sure you guys are probably busy working or going to school in the middle of the week. So I'm going to go back to weekends, you know, either Saturday or Sunday. I know a lot of you are probably busy going out, you know, and doing stuff that you couldn't do for a while because of the pandemic and the shutdowns and everything. So, I appreciate the people. If you still listen to this podcast, way to go. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you. And, I wish I could say that I had more stuff to show you guys. I mean, I'm working on three new songs right now, but I don't really know exactly when those songs are coming out. And right now my priorities are trying to get a job because my living situation changed recently. So, I mean, that's basically my number one priority right now is getting a job. But I haven't found one yet, so until then, you know, I'm still going to have time to do this podcast. I mean, my studio where I do this podcast at is not where I currently live, so, you know, whenever I can get to the studio, I'll record, you know, podcast episodes and just keep doing it until, I mean, as long as my schedule allows me to. I mean, if I get busy working, then I may have to take a break for a while. But I mean, I do have some pending interviews, meaning they're not officially confirmed yet, but the people are interested. It just keeps getting pushed back until probably after Thanksgiving. So hopefully I can end this year, this podcast with a bang with some really cool interviews before the year is over. We'll see. But, like I said, the people I've been trying to get on, like the engineer, Brooks Arthur, and two guys in 19 Frucum Company, Pat Carwin and Frank Jekyll, you know, they're all saying, you know, can this wait until after Thanksgiving? And I'm like, okay, you know, because I really want to have these guys on, you know, and I kind of have to work around their schedules versus mine. So, so basically I'm hoping by the end of this year or by next month, actually, Well, technically, because we're at the end of October, so there's only 2 months left of 2021. So hopefully, before the year is over, I'll end this year of this podcast with some really cool interview episodes, and that'll be cool. But I do want to let you guys in on something kind of cool, because I did do something kind of cool recently. I did a photo shoot, and I do these sometimes, you know, and I haven't done one in a while. I mean, outside of the one I did for my EP cover, that was the last one I did. And then, but this is the first kind of regular photo shoot that I've done, recently. I mean, because the last regular photo shoot I did was back in 2019, so it's been about a year and a half, about a couple years since I've done another photo shoot. So, I did one recently, so keep an eye out on my Instagram. My username is iHeartOldies, and keep an eye out for those images. That'll be coming out really soon, because I'm very, very excited to see those images. And another social media platform you guys can follow me on is TikTok, because as of recently, I have been posting on there. And because TikTok has this really cool feature where you can record a video and then basically talk over or play music under your talking. So that's really cool. It's kind of hard to do that on Instagram. So that's why I've been more active on TikTok. So if you want to follow me on there, it's the same as my Instagram username, iHeartOldies. And that's another thing that I've been doing. So I have been posting on TikTok. So you guys can follow me on there if you like to. You know, so that's just another alternative. You know, if you're hip to that kind of stuff, I don't know if you guys are really hip to TikTok, but it's kind of on the up and up. It's one of those social media platforms that's on the cusp of becoming really big, and it is really big right now amongst, you know, if you're of a certain age. Like if you're like a Gen Z or a millennial, you know, you definitely, you know, are up to speed with TikTok, you know. So So that's kind of the update with me. I mean, I'm working on 3 new songs. I have no clue when they're going to come out. So, you know, I'll just keep you guys in the loop when I have more songs that are ready to go, and when I have enough material for another EP to come out, because I have almost enough, but I could probably use a few more songs, like maybe 3 more songs. And, So that's kind of what's going on with me right now. Hope you guys are doing well. You know, so I'm going to continue with this week's episode. So, yeah, I don't think there's going to be any more lockdowns, because I think enough people are vaccinated fully. So I think we're kind of coming out of the pandemic now. So I'll be going back to putting out episodes on weekends. But anyways, let's get started in this week's song, shall we? All right. So normally I don't do this with my podcast. Because if it's like Christmas time, I try to avoid doing Christmas songs. And you know, it's something that it's kind of like one of those things. It's kind of like a sellout. I mean, sometimes I'll do a song that was out during Christmas time or whatever year in the 60s, you know, it may not be a Christmas song, but for the most part, I try not to do holiday themed episodes of my podcast. Because, you know, I consider that kind of selling out and just sort of, you know, really sort of go, you know, fitting in with, you know, society and everything. And I just, I'm not really a big fan of that. But I mean, I was kind of stumped on what to do this week for the podcast, because I'm actually taking next week off because it's my birthday. And yeah, just to let you guys know, my birthday is on Tuesday. So if you guys want to wish me a happy birthday, you can. I mean, my email is in the description of this episode of this podcast. So that's one way you can reach me if you want to wish me a happy birthday. It is on Tuesday. So as of next week, I'll be a 26-year-old songwriter / producer who's also a huge 60 music fan / expert / nerd. So that's what's happening next week. So I'm taking next week off for my birthday. So this is just going to be in one episode, and I figured that since it's Halloween weekend, and I thought to myself, you know what, maybe this would be a good idea to do kind of a Halloween theme song. And I thought, you know, there is this one song from the 60s that is so huge, and it's such a seasonal, huge, huge seasonal classic that it's like it's been ingrained into people's brains for years and years and years. it's a song that is almost universally well known, not just to baby boomers, but to millennials too. I mean, a lot of young people know this song, and it's just a huge holiday classic as far as it getting basically played on the radio and becoming hugely popular every single year around this time during Halloween. And it's funny because it's a huge song, and most millennials are familiar with it, and even I would argue even some Gen Zs are too. But the thing is that I really don't think a lot of people are familiar with the story behind this song. They don't know who played on it. They don't know where it was recorded. They don't know the real details that went into how the song was recorded. Because it's a very interesting song. It's not a serious song. Again, this is one of those songs that it's a novelty record. So I'm not going to try to spend too much time on lyrics in the song because it's a fun, you know, lighthearted, just not super serious song. You don't want to spend too much time thinking about what the song is about lyrically because it's kind of brainless. But it's still a fun song if you're kind of in the mood for it and you're feeling kind of, you know, in the Halloween spirit. This is a good song to play. But the reason why I'm doing it is because I recently came across some really cool behind the scenes information about this song that I think a lot of people aren't aware of. And it talks about who played on it and who were how they came up with all those sound effects and the actual real details about this song, like where it was recorded and what kind of equipment. So I'm really excited to present this information to you guys, because if you're listening, you're a millennial, you're going to know the song, but you're not going to know any of this information I'm going to present to you, because this is really under the radar stuff that isn't so super easy to find on the internet. So I'm very excited to talk about that information with you guys and educate you guys on it if you don't already know about it, because chances are you probably don't know this information about this song. So I'm very, very excited to talk about this record because it's one of those songs that, again, it's a Halloween favorite. Every single year during Halloween, this song is played. You know, because it's just so timeless, and it's so like it's a very much a tradition, you know, in the pop culture landscape of Halloween for the past like 60, almost 60 years. So without further ado, this song was recorded in May of 1962 and released on August 25th of 1962. It's by an artist named Bobby Boris Pickett. The name of the song is called The Monster Mash.
When my eyes beheld an eerie sight, for my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
wow. Okay, so this is where it gets kind of debatable, because you can either think the song is really, really cool and really, really good, or you think it's a really awful record. I mean, both opinions are acceptable. You can either think this is a great song and it's super fun and super catchy, or you think it's a piece of garbage. I mean whatever opinion you have, it's totally fine. I mean, I'm kind of on the fence between, I don't know if this is a really good song or if it's not. I mean, it's kind of avant-garde, it's kind of weird, but let's talk about it. I mean, let's talk about what makes this song kind of weird and unusual musically and lyrically, but at the same time kind of cool and kind of interesting. But let's just dive into it. Okay, so what the cool factors about this song musically? Definitely not the chord progression. I mean, chord progression, you know, 1-6-4-5, that's it. I mean, that's just kind of what we got going on here. I mean, it's the doo-wop chord changes. I mean, I've talked about this before. I mean, those are the ice cream chord changes that have been used in hundreds and hundreds of doo-wop songs. So not much to say here. I mean, it's very typical of that late 50s, early 60s kind of a sound. A lot of records had this. But what is cool about this song is actually the drums on this record. The drums are really, really good sounding on this song. I mean, they have somewhat of a interesting sound, because they sound fat, they sound beefy, and they sound really, really tight. And the drummer does a really good job of keeping time on this record, but he's very, very much highlighted on this track. I mean, his drums are really are up in front and center. I mean, heck, in the opening of the song, that's all it is drums. And that opening is actually kind of cool with the sound effects, and then the drums come in. That's actually that's actually pretty neat. I mean, I do like that. And the drummer does some really cool fills towards the end of the song too. And I mean, that's just, you know, the drums are really front and center. Now, here's the thing. So just if you're wondering, okay, so what is with this drum beat? Why is it so of this time? Well, it's because there is this sort of like, it's got the twist drum beat. And this is something I haven't really delved into too much on the podcast. But basically, you know, the twist drum beat was that snare hit where it kind of sounds like, I mean, it's that typical sort of that beat that I mean, that's, you know, when you hear that beat, you kind of think of, you know, the twist. You think of that dance craze in the 60s. I mean, that's basically what the drummer is doing. He's doing that drum beat, and you hear that, and you automatically, you know, you gravitate towards that. You know, it's that snare hit, those specific snare hits, the three, the I mean, that's very, very identifiable as far as the twist is concerned, because that's the twist, you know, backbeat, you know, it's very, very identifiable, you know, and it's been used in a bunch of different songs, especially during this period between 1962. And by the way, we haven't talked about Dance Crazy yet in this podcast, so I will get into that once I dive into lyrics of this song. But first, let's talk about the music for a little bit more. You know, another cool part about this song is the piano, because the piano really sticks out in this record too, and it's a really good sounding piano, and he does a really good job of just kind of ad-libbing a little bit while still playing the chord of the song, with still playing a little melody to go along with the track, because this is a weird song, so sometimes, you know, when the musicians don't do much as far as, you know, creating super crazy parts to go along with a weird song like this, it's actually kind of cool when they just kind of sit back and relax and let sort of everything else take over. You know, because that's actually pretty neat. I mean, when the musicians can do that for a weird song like this. But yeah, so the piano, really, really good sounding. He kind of adds his own little melody to kind of go along with the chords, which is pretty cool. And, you know, and it sticks out a lot in the song. And the background singers are pretty, pretty interesting because, again, very subjective. I mean, you can think they sound good, or you think they can sound kind of boring, because these aren't like, you know, the background singers aren't doing like absolutely amazing drop dead, you know, background parts. You know, they're just sort of just inserting the hook, you know, and they're doing the wahoos, and they're just kind of doing the call and response thing, and it's good enough for the song. It doesn't need, you know, drop dead amazing background vocal parts, but I mean, it serves its purpose, is what I'm saying, and that's the other cool part about this song. Just those background parts are good enough for this record. I mean, for a weird song like this, they're good enough. And, you know, and again, like, you know, I mean, the band's kind of cooking. They're not really doing much, because there's other things about this record that are worth talking about, like the sound effects. Now, I haven't really done this on my podcast before, but, you know, that's sort of a lost art with music from this time period versus right now. Sound effects were big back in the 60s. A lot of records back then had sound effects. And sometimes they came from effects records, and sometimes they were handmade. So it really all depended on who was recording the song. So, you know, sometimes they would actually create sound effects in the studio. Because, again, this is before the computers, before, you know, any of that existed. So, you know, they were doing with big, bulky tape machines. So they had to, a lot of these sound effects they had to create on their own using really cool things. And I'll talk about that in a minute, exactly how they created those sound effects. But before I do that, I'm going to dive into the song's lyrics. But I mean, there's not much to say as far as the music is concerned. I mean, again, 1-6-4-5 standard, you know, G, E minor, C, D, nothing too crazy. I mean, in the bridge, they kind of take a little break. They kind of go for the 4-5-4-5. I mean, you know, I like in the bridge when they kind of just stop everything and then the drummer does that fill. That's really cool. And, you know, and again, like there isn't too much to say as far as the music is concerned. So let's talk about the interesting part of the song, which is the lyrics and how they're presented in this. Okay, so here's a weird part about this song. First of all, there's no melody on this record. It's the guy is talking through the lyrics in the song, but he's not rapping. It's not rapid fire, blah, 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 you know, 16th note talking, you know, it's not like that. He's kind of reciting the lyrics. So he's not singing them, and he's doing it in a very specific kind of a voice. And depending on how old you are, you might not know exactly who he's imitating. But he's actually imitating someone very, very famous. And I'll go into that in just a few minutes. But he's imitating a very big horror movie star. And he's doing it in this voice, and it sounds so weird. But, you know, for a record that's a Halloween record, sometimes weird is what is exactly what it's called for. You know, so he's reciting these lyrics, and he's telling the story about this dance, which is actually a variation of a dance back in the 60s called the mashed potato. And let's talk about this for a minute, because we haven't talked about this on my podcast before, but there were, you know, this was a big thing back in the 60s. There were huge dance crazes, and there were dances such as the twist, where you kind of twist your body from side to side, and the monkey, where you kind of move your arms up and down, just like the monkey, and the mashed potato, where you kind of just, you know, like, you know, twist your feet, you know, and basically twist them left and twist them right and twist them back, you know, twist them inwards, twist them outwards, you know, just like you're mashing a potato. So, I mean, there was several different dance crazes that were big in the 60s, specifically in the early 60s. I mean, because, you know, at the time, you know, it was before the Vietnam War, so it was before things really got serious. So in the early 60s, things were still kind of coming off from the late 50s, sort of the good time aspect of music. So, you know, the dance crazes were big. They were very, very huge. And there were tons of dance craze songs about dances like the twist, the mashed potato, the hully gully, you know, the monkey, I mean, the alligator, I mean, the swim. I mean, there, and the swim is actually where you just basically all you do is just you move your arms around like you're swimming underwater, except you're not. You know, so, I mean, a lot of these dance crazes were very basic, but they were huge. I mean, you know, and to bring it back to sort of today's world, you know, a lot of, you know, what we see on TikTok. I mean, if you're on TikTok a lot, you'll see a lot of people, you know, dancing their asses off on there. And if you think to yourself, okay, so before TikTok existed, how do these dance crazes become so huge? Well, the fact of the matter is that, you know, pretty much most markets back in the 60s, most local, you know, cities had their own little teen club dance shows. And a lot of the teenagers that would, you know, that would buy records by a lot of these artists would, you know, go on there and dance, you know, whatever dance craze that was big at the time. They would dance that specific dance on the TV show, and other people would see it on their TV. And that's how the dance craze would take off. And that's how people became aware of it. And, yeah, so, I mean, that's just how these dance crazes spread like wildfire. You know, it was all because, you know, they saw these kids dances, dancing these dances on TV. So that's how it happened. And, this was before the internet. So this is the only way you can really, you know, see this for yourself, or else if you went to an actual like dance back then, you know, so that's how, you know, these dance crazes blew up. And the monster mash is actually a variation of the mashed potato. I'm not sure exactly how to do it, but it's basically a variation of what the dancer just talked about, where you kind of move your feet kind of forwards, and you move them inwards and outwards, and you kind of just move them side to side, just like you're mashing a potato. you know, and that's kind of the dance that the song is basing itself out of off of. So, and again, like there's references to the twist in the song, a transfer twist. And the other, one other thing I want to say about this is that, if you're wondering, okay, Sam, how does this apply to today's world? You know, because we don't hear stuff like this anymore. I mean, unless it's like, you know, the last big novelty dance hit that was huge on the pop charts was a song called Gangnam Style, which is recorded by this Asian guy named Psy. And that was a last big novelty dance hit record that came out. And that came out quite some years ago, like in 2012, 2013. So it's been a minute. So, you know, that where a dance record became so huge. So, you know, how does this sort of make sense with today's world? Well, I can tell you from my end, I actually recorded a song that has a novelty sort of feel to it. Because again, like the song, while it might be a novelty record, it tells a story. And it tells a story about this dance, and it tells a story about a band that sort of plays music to go along with this dance. And there's a plot twist. I mean, there's a lot going on here. And I can tell you from my end, I actually wrote and recorded and put out a song that has a novelty flavor to it. The lyrics don't make any sense, but there is a plot twist, and it does tell a story. So, and that song is called Turquoise Apricot. So, you know, I put out a record that has a kind of a novelty flavor to it. It's a psychedelic rock record, but still has that novelty aspect of it. And novelty records, like I said before, they were just dumb, stupid records that didn't really have, that had, you know, songs didn't, lyrics didn't make any sense. I mean, there was a lot of them back in the 60s. And they don't really represent the best music from that time. They actually represent kind of not so great music from that time. So, I mean, I might roast some more soon. And like I said, like this I could totally roast this record because, you know, you might listen to something like, wow, this is kind of bad. But you probably know the song because, again, huge, huge perennial Halloween classic that is played every single year. So, but yeah, so that's kind of the gist of it. I mean, I've written a song that has that novelty flavor to it. And it's very, very much in that vein, even though it's psychedelic rock, and it has the plot twist, and it tells a story, just like this song. And that song came out this year, Turquoise Apricot. So there you have it. So there's a modern example of something, you know, of a song like this from many, many years ago. So, you know, just to give you an idea for where this sort of genre sort of sits in today's world. But now that we're done with that, let's talk about the story behind the song. Okay, so the story of the Monster Mash all starts and begins with a guy named Gary Paxton. Gary Paxton was an early sort of figure in the LA music scene right at the end of the 50s and the beginning of the 60s. He was part of a duo another guy named Skip Batten, and they were in a duo called Skip and Flip. And Skip being Skip Batten and Flip being Gary Paxton. And they recorded on a very small independent label, and they were based out of Arizona. And they recorded, you know, very, very, very early LA hits, you know, which were, you know, really early on, called It Would Sigh and Cherry Pie. And these are big hits, like very early on. And this is before the surf music took off. This was before the Beach Boys. You know, so this was kind of in the doo-wop sort of era of, you know, late 50s, early 60s, and the teen idol sort of the coming up of sort of the end of the rock and roll era of, you know, the Elvis Presley and Chuck Berry and Little Richard and Jerry Lee Lewis, sort of, you know, the in-betweens from, you know, that and, of course, the British Invasion. But that doesn't apply here because we're talking about L.A. So, you know, basically, you know, Gary Paxton had a relationship with this guy named Kim Fowley. And Kim Fowley was another L.A.-based producer. And, you know, they did a lot of music together. And they produced a record called Alley Oop. And they did it at this recording studio, which is basically on Argyle Street on Hollywood Boulevard. Which is basically downstairs recording studio from Lawrence Welk's Hollywood Palladium, you know, which is essentially the place where they shot the Lawrence Welk show in the 60s. That's downstairs from that building is where they record Alley Oop, which was the first location for another recording studio called American Recorders. And essentially, they recorded, and it was, and again, it was a dumb novelty record. It was a song about a caveman. It was based off a comic strip character, a song written by a guy named Dallas Frazier. So again, you know, they essentially went in the studio to record the song, and Gary Paxton was the only guy, only, you know, he sang the record, and they hired out studio musicians. Gaynell Hodge was one that was a piano player. And you know, and the hire, you know, Sandy Nelson, you know, did percussion on the record, and you know, they you know, basically they had, you know, studio musicians play on the song, and essentially, you know, and they released the record under a fake name, actually, and because for some reason Gary Paxton really didn't want to be a solo artist. So what he did is that he released the record under the name The Hollywood Argyles, and he got the name The Hollywood Argyles because of a street in Hollywood called Argyle Street, which is directly where the recording studio where they record the song at. So they decided to call themselves the Hollywood Argyles, even though there was no such group as the Hollywood Argyles. And he produced the record, and Kim Fowley produced the song, and Ronnie Silco, you know, was the drummer. Harper Cosby played bass, and Gaynell Hodge played piano, and Sandy Nelson did the ashtrays and basically did the percussion on the song and shouted, "Look, you know, the owl after Look at That Caveman Go." So basically, you know, they released the record. It became a huge number one record. But it was actually, and another competing version came out at the exact same time called Dante and the Evergreens. And these were all songs released on tiny, tiny little labels. And it's kind of a miracle that these songs even became hits in the first place. But the point I'm trying to make is that this particular record that they released, you know, the Monster Mash, was actually released on Gary Paxton's own record label. He put it out under his own record label and distributed it using his own money. And the record label was called Gar Pax Records. And it was essentially just his first name and last name, Gary Paxton. So he put it out under Gar Pax Records. And that was his own label. And that's something that's actually kind of cool, because that's what a lot of artists do that now. A lot of artists release songs on their own labels. So that's something to keep in mind. And they were doing that back then too. I mean, there, you know, not everything was being released on the huge major labels like Columbia and RCA. I mean, there was stuff getting released on small independent labels, and a lot of times they were owned by the producer that produced it. And a lot of times it was also because, you know, they couldn't get anybody to distribute it. So essentially what happened was that the Gary Paxton, who produced this song, discovered Bobby Boris Pickett because he was a member of this vocal group called the Cordials. And basically what happened was that, you know, the Cordials used to do this routine, right, where they would perform a song. And it was usually The Diamonds, Little Darling. And during that section, there was like a spoken word part of that song where the bass player of the song says, "Darling, I need you." And basically, during that section of the song, his routine is that he would always do the song in a Boris Karloff voice. Now, essentially, that's exactly who he's imitating. He's imitating Boris Karloff, who was a big horror movie actor in the 30s and 40s, and that's basically who he was imitating. If you don't exactly know who he is, he basically did the narration for Dr. Seuss' How the Grinch Stole Christmas for Chuck Jones for Warner Brothers. I mean, for MGM. You know, back in the 60s. So essentially what he did is that so he did it in that voice, and that gave Paxton the idea to have him record a song that Bobby Boris Pickett wrote with Linda Caprisi called The Monster Mash. And, you know, because he thinks that, okay, this guy can imitate Boris Karloff pretty good. I think we can create something kind of cool by having him do this sort of Halloween sort of theme song in his Boris Karloff voice that I think would sound pretty cool. So what they did is that they went to a recording studio, and they went to Conway Recording Studios in Hollywood, and they cut the song on a 3-track tape machine, and it took them 8 hours to do the basic introduction. Now, here's a breakdown for you exactly how the heck did they come up with all those crazy sound effects. So basically what they did is that they had a racket wrench, 2 hairspray cans, a glass of water, and a straw, and a guitar string with a pick and electric razor. So those are the things that they use to create those sound effects. And again, you can kind of imagine, you know, hearing that when you listen to this record, you can kind of imagine the wrench, you know, the chains being thrown on the floor, and the hairspray cans, and the glass, and the bubbles coming out of the glass of water. I mean, you can kind of hear that being, you know, used in the song, and you can kind of imagine that when you listen to the beginning of this record. But that just goes to show you that they really had to get crafty back in the 60s before, you know, things were super easy now, because now you can just drag and drop effects on any session in Pro Tools or Logic. But back then, you know, you actually had to create your own sound effects. I mean, there were sound effects records, but I mean, a lot of times most sound effects on 60s records were handmade, you know. So as far as who played on the session, widely everywhere, people say Leon Russell played on it. That's not true. Leon Russell was supposed to play on the song, but he didn't, because he showed up very, very late to the recording session. So instead, they actually had Gary Paxson play piano and organ on the song. And he actually overdubbed the Hammond B3 on the record, so he played piano on the song. So what you're hearing on the song is Gary Paxson, not Leon Russell. And they also had Chuck Hamilton on bass and Billy Lee Riley on guitar. Now, the drums on this record, now, this is actually kind of cool, because it's not who you think it is. A lot of people say it was Mel Taylor from The Ventures. No, it wasn't Mel Taylor from The Ventures. It was actually someone else, a guy named Jesse Sales. Now, Jesse Sales was one of those, top LA session musicians very early on, before the Wrecking Crew, played on records by the Coasters and the Robins and, you know, the Hollywood Flames. I mean, he was on tons and tons of early, late 50s, early 60s LA doo-wop records. He was the guy that, you know, was used on a lot of songs. I mean, he played on Let's Dance by Chris Montez, and I interviewed him and I mentioned that, and he actually confirmed that to me, and that was pretty cool. So yeah, so Jesse Sales played drums on the session, and it wasn't, and you know, and the funny thing about it is that, you know, Bobby Boris Pickett basically just put down his lead vocal after the track was already done, including the background vocals. All he did was just do the vocal, and he did it in almost one take. So that's pretty crazy, you know, because he knew exactly how he wanted to do it. So he basically did it in one freaking take. So that's insane. I mean, just, you know, wow. So basically what he did, all the labels basically turned the song down after the record was made, after it was being pressed, after the song was pretty much done. You know, basically what he did is, I started his own label. You know, when nobody else would record Monster Mash, he went down to, he wouldn't release it. He went down to Pressing Pan, Santa Monica Boulevard, and he said he wanted to put it out on his own label. And he asked, can he press 4,000 copies? And the guy said, you mean you didn't get any money after Ali Oop? He said, I didn't get paid, but you press over 1 million singles, so you know that I cut records that will give you a lot of business. So he said, okay. And then he pressed them up for Garpax. So basically, like, you know, he got screwed over, you know, at, you know, f- you know, from the first song that he did, but he was able to, you know, resurrect himself, you know, after this song. And basically, it's funny because, like, you know, he tried to go up to Bakersfield, KFI, and then, you know, and the DJ said, who's Garpax Records? We got nothing to play unless you got a distribution. You get that and you can bring it back. So basically he went to the station and he would go down to every single, he went down the number one record store in town and basically found the teenage girl who was running the cash register, and he had his picture skip and flip in the Argyles and Teen Magazine, and he said, I got this new record. We were just going to put it out. We want to be able to first have it. So I gave him 10 free records, have them put out by the cash register, and we go to the radio station, and they ask about distribution, says it's in the stores. They call, and the counter girl says, yeah, we got it right here. And then they came back, and within less than a week, I had to order 60, I had orders of 60,000 records, and it would debut on station playlists at number two, or debut number five. And then next thing you know, the song was number one, released under the name Bobby Boris Pickett and the Crypt Kickers. And it became a huge freaking hit, and it didn't, and it got re-released in the UK in 1973, and that reached number three. So, I mean, it's just, you know, it just goes to show you that, I mean, shit, like, this is just like, you know, there's a lot of crazy stories about records like this, and you know, I mean, you know, and again, like, Gary Paxton put this out under his own label. So this is pretty crazy. And in fact, like, you know, he opened up his own recording studio too, Gary Paxton Sound Service, on 1633 Hudson Street, and that's where the association recorded basically a lot of major hit records, including Along Comes Mary by the and Cherish by the Association, and Hooray for Hazel by Tommy Roe, and Sweepy by Tommy Roe. So, I mean, you know, it just, you know, Gary Paxton was very much sort of a, you know, he was definitely a, you know, a trailblazer in the music industry at the time, did a lot of cool stuff, you know, so, and like I said, like he basically recorded, and Dallas Frazier, by the way, was a Nashville based songwriter. So, you know, he basically, he got some of the, that's how he, you know, He discovered, you know, he found out about Ali from a publishing company in Nashville, and then he brought that record and recorded it under his own name. So, you know, and then put it out under the Hollywood Argyles. So, that's about it as in regards to this record is concerned. But just a few takeaways, you know, I mean, you know, again, like, you know, he put this out under his own label. So that's something many, many artists do right now. And it's the what you want to do right now instead of being signed to a label. I mean, that's all kind of subjective, but I mean, you know, he put it out under his own label, and, you know, and also, you know, the song is very universally well known, you know, to lots and lots of different people of all, you know, all walks of life. And, you know, it's a big, big hit record, but I just described to you exactly how they came up with those sound effects on those records. So I hope you found that interesting, but that kind of concludes this week's episode. So that concludes episode number 156 of Main 60 Music Podcast, the Millennial Throwback Machine. I'm Sam Williams, and if you know this song, and you're like, okay, I've heard this song a million times, it's played every year around Halloween, but we're like, wait a minute, I never knew how they came up with those sound effects, and I didn't know, you know, that the, you know, and like I said, one more thing I want to add is that the Crypt Kickers weren't a real group. They were just like a made-up band of, you know, again, these were all studio musicians playing on the record. Billy Lee Riley was a Memphis-based musician who came out to L.A. and played on sessions, you know, and Chuck Hamilton was another session musician who played bass, and again, Jesse Taylor was another session guy, and again, so there was no such group as Crypt Kickers, and you're like, wait a minute, really? Like, I never knew that, and I've heard the song over a million times, and I just, wow, that's so interesting. Like I said before, no one would have known because they didn't give these guys credit back then. So, I mean, it was, you know, again, it was just like a fake group. I mean, you can't really do that now, you know. But if you're like, wow, that's so fascinating, I did not know that, and you want to let me know about it, and you're a millennial and you've heard the song before, you never knew the story behind it, and you found it really interesting, and you learned it from me, please email me at samltwilliamicloud.com. You can also reach out to me on Instagram at iHeartOldies. You can also check out more of my original music at samwilliamsmusic.net. And you can also find me on TikTok, too, and same username, iHeartOldies. And as per usual, things you can check on the description of this episode of this podcast, or the EP you put out this year. Hopefully we'll put out some more music next year. I am working on that, but these things really do take time, so you guys really have to be patient with me on that. So in the meantime, you can check out the EP you put out this year. Please do that. Link in the description of this episode of this podcast. Please let me know what you think of that. You can email me at samlcwilliamicloud.com. You can also reach out to me on Instagram at iHeartOldies. And check out more of my original music at samwilliamsmusic.net. And you can follow me on TikTok too, same username as Instagram, iHeartOldies. And another thing you can check out is the two interviews I did this year with Honk Magazine and Chatter LA. We'll love it if you can read those, and you can let me know if you would like to meet me in person after reading those interview episodes. After reading those interviews I did. If you learn a lot of really cool stuff about me, you want to meet me in person, please let me know. You can email me at samltwill@icloud.com. You can also reach out to me on Instagram at iHeartOldies. And you can also check out the official Spotify playlist for this podcast. There you'll be able to find all the songs I've talked about on my show so far, including some of the ones I've mentioned in interview episodes. We'd love if you guys can check out those playlists and let me know what you think of those. You can definitely, email me. Let me know if you have any suggestions for songs to talk about next on my podcast that I haven't yet. But first, listen to those playlists first, and they'll give you a good idea for the kind of songs to talk about on my show. And you can do that by emailing me at samltwilliam@icloud.com. And another thing you can check out is the official Redbubble merch store for this podcast. You'll be able to find the super cool merch logo specifically for this podcast. And if you'd like to, definitely let me know what you think of that. I love to hear your thoughts on the logo plus the price of each item in the store. You can do that by emailing me at samltwilliam@icloud.com. And you can also check out the other cool new merch out, the turquoise apricot merch. I love you can check that out as well. Link to that is also in the description of this episode of this podcast. And you can check out the official music video about this year for Keeper in My Back Pocket. We'll love it if you guys could check that out and let me know what you think of that music video. I think I'm gonna do another episode of me doing one of my own original songs, another original music special episode. I think that'd be kind of cool because I think you guys should hear some more of my music because it's actually really, really good. Again, thank you guys again for listening to this week's episode of this podcast. I'm Sam Williams, and I hope you guys have a really cool Halloween this year. I hope you guys get to go out, and I know you couldn't do that last year, so I hope you guys have a lot of fun for Halloween this year, and you guys do something really cool, and this is definitely the song to do that with. This is definitely that perennial Halloween classic, so hoping you learn some stuff from it you didn't already know. Hopefully learned a lot of cool things about it, from me. So I'm Sam Williams, and thank you guys for joining me for this week's episode of my podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. Until next week, please keep things groovy.